Everyone, and welcome to Pixel Pixel, where the X is silent, but Marcus's love for collecting localized PC visual novels with physical releases most definitely isn't. This is episode 112, and I am half of your host combo, Anne, and with me, as always, is my wonderful husband and visual novel collector, Marcus.
Hi.
Hi. So you have some big news for everyone.
I guess so.
Or for you.
For me. For me.
For us, since I am now privy to the collection as well.
Yeah, so I finally finished my, official English language visual novel releases on PC.
That are physical.
Yeah, no, I think I said physical.
No, okay.
Up to, like, 2012 or something, or like everything except for crowdfunded games, because there was a lot of games that were crowdfunded and I was like, I can't support every Kickstarter and get them all. So like, what would you call that, like a retail release, even though most of these never come into stores?
Yeah, I don't know what you would call that. Not Kickstarted.
Yes.
Now a crowdfunded game.
Yes. So yeah, the last two games were The Maid's Story and True Love. Never seen either of them before on eBay after, you know, watching them for like 5 or more years. So when they popped up, I'm like, okay, I'll get them both. And it was the same seller who seemed to have a whole bunch of various older visual novels for some reason. So I didn't need any of the others, but I needed these two. So I bought them. Mm-hmm. I got them. It's done.
It's finished. But you told me not officially finished. There's a caveat.
Well, I mean, what my collection set out to do, which is to collect visual novels specifically, is done. Or continuing, like, as Jast and people release other physical releases, then I'll keep getting them. But, I can never find these last two games, so I need something else to collect. It was like, okay, things that are like kind of visual novels or games or releases from companies who release visual novels, but they weren't actually visual novels. Like Jast USA released a bunch of picture discs, which is not, they're not even games at all. And so I want some of those. Things like that. Mm-hmm. So I still need some picture discs.
But the problem with those is they're like, hard to find, and the people that do list them for stupid amounts of money, right?
Lately, it didn't used to be that way. I don't know why right now people are trying to sell these games for $2,000. They're not worth that at all. But, you know, whatever. They're not even supposed to be on eBay.
True, yeah. When was it, last year that eBay... I mean, technically, the games that you just bought wouldn't be allowed, right? They don't allow 18-plus material of any kind?
They do if it's, like, for historical purposes. Art. So, like, Playboy magazines are okay.
Oh, so maybe this is considered historical
now. No, it's not. Like, because a lot of the listings got taken down for visual novels, so these are just there. No one's reporting them. I don't know.
Well, at least you found them, particularly True Love. Well, both of them have really dumb titles that are hard to search.
True Love is worse, I would say.
Than A Maid Story or The Maid Story?
The Maid Story.
The Maid Story, even though there's more than one maid.
Yes.
Confusing. But congratulations. I know.
Thank you.
As long as I've been your friend, I think, as long as I've known you personally, you've been collecting these. Would you say that, or would you
say... Yeah, I've been collecting visual novels since I started playing them, but it's just that my eBay-ness started more recently.
Uh-huh. But you said at least 5 years.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I don't fully understand the desire to have a complete collection of anything, but I'm proud of you.
Well, it's for historical purposes. Uh-huh. I like having this library to see... You know, this is the history of English language visual novels.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, now you gotta open your library. Or museum. museum I keep talking about.
Yep. No.
No, okay. No one can come visit and see your collection.
No, it's I can document it and put it online, but yeah, not a physical
one. Not for the visiting public. Got it. But you still have your PlayStation 2 collection ongoing.
Yeah, that's never going to end. That's like 2,000-something titles.
Yeah. So that one is all English language releases on PS2, yes. Both American and Europe?
No, just US? US.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my god, Europe would be impossible. There was like way more games.
Really?
Like at least 4,000. There's so much shovelware.
Oh dear. Well, I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And now we can enjoy them.
Yes.
You were showing me some of, what was it? The Otaku Publishing?
Yeah, Otaku. Oh my god. Otaku Publishing, yes.
And I like that they all have a very specific box style and like they're labeled as like volume 1, 2, 3, 4. That's cute.
Mm-hmm.
Like thematic. And you have all of them now, except for the one that's the
picture disc. Picture disc.
And then if you have that, you'd have a complete collection.
Of their releases, yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah.
I don't have any similarly exciting news. That's okay. But I've been dabbling in some more crafty stuff lately. I haven't shared it much online. In fact, I don't think I mentioned it anywhere at all in particular. But I'm no longer working at NIS America, which is where I was up until this July. I decided to go back to freelancing and doing some creative things that I've been wanting to do, but just haven't had the time or energy for. So that's been fun. I got my first freelance translation gig since going full freelance again. So that's fun. I've just started that up and hopefully I'll be sharing news about that sometime. Who knows when these things happen? I don't even know when it's going to get announced, but that'll be fun. And then I've been doing more craft stuff, as I mentioned. I'm really getting into junk journaling, which if anyone listening is like online in like Gen Z girly online communities or like hanging out on Instagram, they'll know that's the current hotness. Everyone and their sister is into junk journaling. But I was doing it since maybe last year, so I'm a little ahead of the curve, maybe. I mean, if you've been reading my blog for any amount of time, I started doing the whole Nietzsche, actually went back and looked. And what did I say? 11 years ago, I think, is when I first bought one. I believe it was 2013. I wrote an article about being interested in it. And I was like, I'm going to buy one next year. And so then it was 2014. So yes, 11 years ago that I bought my first Hobonichi, was really into those, and still am, I still have them. But I found that the Hobonichi scene, at least at that time, and like people sharing their journals online, it was like so immaculate. It was like these gorgeous illustrations in the pages, and like everything was so like beautifully done, and it felt like you had to like be very performative about it. Of course, you don't have to share it online. And of course, the journal's for yourself and everybody always says, you know, do what you want with it. But I think it's easy to see everyone sharing what they're doing and being like, oh, you know, I don't want it. Well, even without seeing what everyone else is doing, I always am one of those people who is like, I don't want to ruin the beautiful, pristine pages of this white journal I have. And anytime I get a new notebook, I'm like, oh, this drawing or this entry is horrible, and then I rip it out and start all over again. But then on top of that, you have the sharing online aspect of Instagram or Tumblr, which is where I saw a lot of them at the time, people sharing all the really cool stuff. And then it became even more like, I only want the best of the best, like the best entries and, you know, the most beautiful pictures, and I'm going to make it look immaculate. And then I would get like, you know, what do they call it? I get like frozen. And then I wouldn't do it, or I'd put it off until I had time to sit down and do a bunch of entries and be really methodical about it. And then I just get behind, and then I feel bad about being behind. It's like this whole cyclical cycle of journaling. I know you shouldn't feel any pressure to be a certain way about your journal, but sometimes you can't help it, especially if you're a bit of a perfectionist. But the thing with junk journaling, or I think there were other terms. Like, obviously, it's, like, scrapbooking. There was another term that went... I can't remember. Scratchbook? Anyway, there was another term maybe from, like, the previous decade that people were using for basically the same thing. But this idea of, like, literally just taking maybe garbage, or for a better term, junk from your life. Like, you know, what if you go to a Japanese restaurant and your chopsticks come in a paper sleeve? You can take that paper sleeve home and, like, paste in your journal as a memory from the restaurant you went to. Or, you know, you get a present and use a scrap of that wrapping paper from the present in your journal rather than throwing it away. So that culture of junk journaling and the people that I saw doing it online, I'll shout out a YouTube creator I really like called Thrifty Day. She's actually located relatively close to us here in SoCal. And she's doing a lot of videos about junk journaling and like how to make your own and stuff, and she's been doing that for a while, but she kind of turned me on to some of the different strategies or ways that you can reuse things in your journal, or even make junk journals from scratch. So rather than, say, using an existing notebook like a Hobonichi, you take scrap papers, like even packaging from, say, like an Amazon, you know, like those paper bags they might send you, like a video game in from Amazon, things like that, and then making your own notebook out of them, so you're reusing stuff. So I really like the aspect of reusing, so not throwing stuff away, reusing the items and keeping them and making them pretty. But then also, when it's literal junk, you don't feel as much pressure not to screw it up. So it's been very freeing to be like, you know what, I'm just going to throw whatever I want in my journal. It doesn't matter. And yet, most of the time, because it's junk, it's like a chopstick wrapper or a old piece of paper. You pretty much can only go up from there. It's not like a beautiful white sheet of paper and then you scribble on it and it might work worse. You can only make it look better. So I found that that's been very freeing. Long story short, I think it was a bit long, the story, actually. But hopefully some people find that interesting. I really like it. So I've been really into junk journaling and reusing materials like decoupage. So taking old magazine cutouts and like doing collages on different materials like coasters and things. And I've been trying to sell a bit of it, not because I particularly want to make money, but just, you know, it might be fun to have some people out there with something I've made. And also, if I keep making all these things, we're going to be swimming in visual novels and decoupage junk journals, and we won't be able to escape. So we can't let our house fill up with them. But we had a little garage sale the other day, and I brought some junk journal kits I made. So I made the journals out of reused papers from hand. I stitched them so they had hand-stitched spines in them, and then made like a little ephemera kit. So I put the journal in and like little pieces of papers and odds and ends from my collection and made like a packet. This is not my idea. I've seen people do this before at craft markets and fairs and things, and I thought it was really cute. So I thought I'd try it. It's not really the vibe for a garage sale, but I was like, well, whatever, I have this stuff, so I'm going to bring a couple. And this little girl, I couldn't tell you how old she was, but maybe 12 or 13. She was really into them, and she grabbed one, and then I saw her leave with her mom and sister, maybe. And probably 10 minutes later, she came running back and bought the other one. And it was like the best feeling ever. So I'm so thrilled with that. Even if nobody bought them, I think I'd still enjoy doing them. But it's definitely nice to see them appreciated. And it's gotten me being a little more creative. So that's been a lot of fun. And I made you a junk journal too. Yeah. And I guess I haven't really made them as other presents. But I hope... No, none of my family's listening. Maybe I'll make some for Christmas this year. Anyway, that's been a lot of fun. So I've been doing that on the side, as I mentioned, freelance. And I've also been doing more drawing and uploading some of my designs to TeePublic. So you can see some of my like fandom sticker designs. I made a sticker based on the dog ending in Silent Hill 2. And a sticker of Porco Rosso. Which is kind of relevant in today's political climate. So that is available at tpublic.com/chickpixel, maybe? I better look up the URL and I'll put that in the description. I'm not actually sure what my tpublic URL is, but I've been having fun with that. Okay, so next up, we do have some news we want to talk about. We had a Nintendo Direct recently, and there was quite a lot going on, so I think we're not gonna like fully cover every little thing that happened, but stuff that was notable for us specifically. So I'm gonna let you go first, since I need a break, Marcus.
Okay. I don't like the thing that they announced after Super Mario Brothers Wonder, which was the plant,
the talking plant, the talking flower figure toy.
Yeah.
We don't even really know what it is.
No, I don't like it.
Well, first of all, his voice sucks, doesn't it?
I think, it's like fine as a voice, but like, I feel like when you're thinking about Super Mario Brothers, I would expect something maybe a bit cuter.
Yeah.
It's not really a cute voice, and I don't want it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your opinion. It's not for you. No, I don't know who it's for, honestly. Was everyone like, we love the talking flower in Super Mario Wonder?
Maybe.
Maybe.
That's my first thought. I don't like the flower.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? Pokemon Pocopia.
It should really be Poketopia, but...
Pocopia.
Pocopia. Pocopia. Why isn't it Pokepia? So I'm confused on many levels.
I don't know.
But basically, Minecraft, though I have seen some people say it's like Animal Crossing crafting, but Animal Crossing New Horizons, that's the latest one, right? That one was kind of Minecraft-y inspired, right? In the way that you edited the island and crafted and things.
I mean, maybe. Sure, crafting is Minecraft-inspired somewhat.
Well, when you saw Pocopia, you immediately said Minecraft.
Well, because it's got this voxel art style. Yeah. Although I'm not sure if it's actually voxels or just styled to look like them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, big, thick blocks.
Mm-hmm. So, what do you have to say about it?
I think it's funny that Nintendo, or I guess, who sued the people who did that?
Pal World.
Was it Nintendo?
I think it was Pokemon Company.
Okay, well,
but I mean, Pokopia is Pokemon Company.
Yeah.
And Koei Tecmo is developing it, right? Yeah.
I just think it's funny that Pal World's in trouble or could be in trouble, but, you know, everyone can make a Minecraft game, so that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, many people have. It's also old, like late. It's late. It's like, well, Minecraft? Okay.
When you think about it, Pokemon is also old. That's been around how long? And Pal World is only making a spin-off inspired thing now. I mean, there have been a million Pokemon inspired things.
Yeah. So I don't know why Pal World... I mean, Pal World got in trouble for, like, the wrong things. I think the art was more of an issue than the other things. Yeah. Anyway, I'm saying Minecraft Fever... Where everyone had to make their own Minecraft game. Dragon Quest Builders!
Yeah, how old is that? That's gotta be like 10 years old.
Yes. Anyway, it's a bit late on the trend.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm sure Minecraft is still very popular, obviously.
And I'll say the Ditto, humanoid Ditto, is freaky and I don't like him.
I don't know. I think it's funny, but I mean, it could have just been Ditto. It didn't have to turn into a person.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
Or like... It could have been a humanoidish Pokemon. There are a lot of Pokemon have arms and legs and can do things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not a big fan either, as you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
I am a fan, however, of the new Yoshi game, Yoshi and the Mysterious Book.
Yeah.
I believe is what it's called. The art style looks really cute. Looks like it's Yoshi's story inspired, right? That side scrolling. I mean, others. Yoshi games recently, like Woolly World was side-scrolling, but this kind of... A book theme too, like crayons and really cute art style, and this looks really cute too, so I'm into that. Obviously, I will be excited to play that whenever it comes out. I can't remember if they said a time frame, but...
I don't know.
Sometime. Something I will not be playing, though, is the Donkey Kong Bonanza DLC, because I saw that in Crone. I was like, no, I just finished. I don't want to touch it again. So I think that is not for me. Notably, they didn't say how much it was during the direct. Mm-hmm. I would assume that was a specific choice not to say it. Come to think of it, I guess there weren't really any other prices listed. Like, you know, they weren't talking about prices in the direct, but it just felt a little weird because they were like, and it's going to be available today. You can get it now. No price. Anyway, it was $19.99, and it's called DK Island and Emerald Rush. So it's a cute thing to have the DK Island that's calling back to the, is it the Country Games or when?
I don't know. To me, it's Donkey Kong 64, but I don't really have.
You know more than me.
I know Donkey Kong 64. I don't know, like, Country.
So they have the island in that one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, either way, callback, island, so new location. And then this Emerald Rush, like, mini game thing where you're just trying to collect a bunch of emeralds, not gold emeralds, for King Void, or what's his name?
Is it King
Void? I don't know. I'm getting confused. Void, who wants you to help him out. And so that's more of like a challenge mode where you're rushing to get a lot of points in a short period of time. And I'm just not... Of course there need to be fireworks right now. What is it? 4th of July? Yes. Or what? Anyway, I'm not really into those sorts of challenge modes, especially when it's like platforming related or adjacent. So I'm sure some people will enjoy this, but I've had enough of Donkey Kong for now. And... I will not be picking it up.
Good. I'm interested in Fatal Frame 2 remake reimagined or whatever the hell they called it. Although I was like, did they remake Fatal Frame 1?
I think the answer is no.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Anyway, I wish I knew, but I don't know. So I think if they didn't, it's interesting that they're starting with 2. I think 2 is, like, a fan favorite, though, so maybe.
I was gonna ask, do you think that might be why?
Yes.
Kind of like, why did Bluebird do Silent Hill 2? Because...
Well, Silent Hill 1's already been remade, kind of.
Well, not recently.
Yeah. But... Either way, it's interesting. I think I want to play it, but I probably want to try going through Fatal Frame 1 first, and then getting too scared and not playing it. So yeah,
notably, for those who haven't heard before, Fatal Frame series is one of the few horror games that actually scares you, right, Marcus?
Yes.
That's so funny to me. I mean they spook me, but everything spooks me, so it's interesting. They're just ghosts.
It's scary because they come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and you have to keep looking at them, right? You don't run away from them. You have to look at them to kill them, right?
If you use your camera, yes.
Are there other ways to kill them?
I don't think so.
Okay. I don't like when you go to get an item and they grab your hand out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. That might be the newer ones that do that.
That's definitely more of the newer ones. I think the old ones did it too sometimes.
Yeah, that was spooky. As for other things I am interested in, I was very surprised to see a little surprise insertion of my favorite Danganronpa character, Komaeda. So Nagito Komaeda, he appeared to announce Danganronpa 2x2, 2x2. Yes. Two. So it's a remake of Danganronpa 2, which again, hey, I didn't even think about that. It's like a Fatal Frame 2. They didn't fully do a remake of 1, Danganronpa 1. I assume it's because of Komaeda's, his allure. He's not in
his
1.
His appeal.
I think people really like him, me included. Maybe Danganronpa 2 is a fan favorite. I'm not sure. But anyway, it looks like it's fully remade. I mean, the graphics look a bit different. It seems like the environment's a little different. And then there's going to be some kind of additional story in there. So you bet I am interested in that. I really liked that game. Though now I'm like, I don't know, will it hold up for me? Like, maybe it's one of these things that's like of a time. I'm not sure. We'll see.
It could be.
It could be, indeed.
I think it's really funny that Nintendo's doing Virtual Boy Nintendo Classics.
Oh, my God.
And that they aren't content to just have them there. but that they also decided they needed to offer a limited or special physical peripheral to go with it. That you can get, I think it's a $99 Virtual Boy replica.
Or $25.
$25 cardboard one, which I'm like, Google Cardboard was, like, I think free. so why is this $25 for cardboard? Because people will buy it. I just think it's so funny that it's, like, you know, it was such a huge failure when it originally came out. So it's funny to see Nintendo kind of celebrate a failed product. Like, a high, you know, a massively failed product. A product that gave people headaches. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's very funny. I will not buy the Virtual Boy for $99, but it's very funny. That's all I can say.
Do we know if you can actually play them on the, you know, virtual console without the peripheral?
Sure you can.
It'll just be 2D.
I kind of feel like it was always 2D. I don't know.
I really don't know the Virtual Boy that well. I will say, when I saw this, I was like, anyone that has a problem with game key cards should not be buying the headset, because you don't own any of those Virtual Boy games. So as soon as the Nintendo Switch 2 on the store all goes offline in 20 years or whatever, probably sooner, you're going to have another dead piece of hardware sitting in your house. You don't own any of it. It's subscription. We haven't talked about key cards. I'm not gonna get it. But that's, I know people have things to say about that. So I feel like it's very similar. So not a fan. I wouldn't be a fan of it anyway. I'm not really interested in the Virtual Boy. But it's like, if they had sold it like the, what were those minis? Like the NES mini, you know, as a pack where you get the games and the headset and it's a thing that you have and it's yours. It's not, you know, as soon as you stop subscribing to Nintendo Switch Online, you don't get access to the games anymore. Yes.
So, yeah, well, anyone who's buying this is never going to stop subscribing.
Yeah, true. fair enough. But it's just silly. And it's too bad they didn't do that route. I had a good idea there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they still could if they really wanted to.
They probably won't.
No. But yeah, it's just funny. It's like, wow. The legacy of this failed console is now celebrated, which is, like, fine. It's just, like, weird. I wouldn't have expected something like that necessarily.
It is very weird, and I know it's not just for the Switch 2, but it's kind of a weird look to be like, hey, look what we've got now. Like, the Switch 2 just came out, and it's like, and here's this failed thing from a long time ago that nobody really cares about. It's just an interesting move. They could have released it on, you know, when the Switch was at its peak.
Yeah, they just waited.
It
certainly wasn't about the power, because the Virtual Boy is not a very intensive system.
Yeah.
I would like to try some of the games. I have never really played Virtual Boy.
Yeah, me neither. As for other things, I'm very excited for the new Fire Emblem, Fortune's Weave. That looks really cool. I haven't really played a lot of the recent Fire Emblems, but I just like their vibe, so I will appreciate the vibes and maybe sometime play it.
Good.
As for things that I was a little surprised about and not super excited about, I don't know, like Resident Evil Requiem. Thought that was a really poor showing. It's like, hey, we're bringing this to the Switch and it looks way worse. Are you excited? and then they said, okay, we're going to bring 7 and 8 too. Just, I think 7 and 8 are coming out the same day Requiem comes out. So it's not even like we're going to release them, say, a month ahead of time so people can get hyped for 9. It's all in one day. So I don't know. The only people that are going to opt for Requiem on the Switch 2 are obviously people that don't have access to other consoles. Because, I mean, even not watching them side by side, it just didn't look that great. I was like, that is not very impressive. But it was new footage, and we saw some, like, big, tall, scary guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am excited for that game, just not on the Switch 2. And then finally, I wanted to briefly mention that there's something I was involved in this Direct. There was a very, very brief showing of Disguise 7 Complete in the highlight reel, and I actually had the opportunity to help arrange that. So that's my little my little claim to fame here. It was very cool to be able to do that, and I got to see a little bit behind the scenes of like how these things are made. Obviously, I can't speak to any of that, but it, you know, being involved allowed me to see the process and like how early it starts and this and that. And we weren't podcasting back then, but way back when Phantom Brave, The Lost Hero, was announced, that was featured in a Nintendo Direct in June of last year, I think. And I was also involved in getting that done and helping with what footage we showed and also like what lines were in it. And it was a lot of fun to do. So I just had to mention that. As for other news, this was something that we debated talking about in the last episode, and we're like, well, there's not really any updates on it, and people, you know, aren't really talking about it that much, so we opted not to mention it, but all this payment processor stuff with, like, Visa and MasterCard and particularly Steam and itch.io pulling adult games or games with adult content in them, or maybe not so much adult content in them, it's sort of, you know, a contested thing, then pulling them in response to these payment processors putting pressure on them has been a hot topic for, I don't know, at least a month now, if not more. And there was a really good article that came out on Eurogamer, and I'll put that link in the description, but it's about queer developers speaking out about the adult games remaining in limbo following all these issues, particularly on Itch. I think, I mean, both Steam and Itch are kind of in limbo with some of these, but the latest update with Itch is they suddenly removed everything, and then I guess you can only have your game back on Itch if you were removed if you make the game free.
So the games are there, they're just unlisted as far as I know. So that means they won't show up in any searches anymore, which is not, so they are still downloadable if you have them or purchase them, but it's on like Itch. There's yes, but there's right. No way to discover them. You know, like before you could search a tag or a term and see all the games that right. may meet that criteria for you, but if they aren't searchable, then you kind of have to know, because you have to, like, someone has to give you a link, like, you have to be following the developer on social media and get their link to their store or whatever. It impacts sales tremendously, because there's no more ability for people to just kind of wander onto your games. It's like they have to specifically know and go to your specific URL to get a game, which is not good. And I think, yes, if you want to be discoverable, again, you have to be free.
Okay. And then there's still an issue where all the payments were frozen. So if you were a paid game prior to getting delisted from the discovery search, then your payments are stuck in limbo, it seems like, maybe. At least on Itch.
Yes, as far as has been publicly disclosed, yeah, it first happened, and then, like, later on, a couple weeks later, Itch posted an update post, which at this point it was in July, so
that's a while old, ago.
But they were basically saying, like, you know, we don't want to not pay people, but we can't because of the pressure, and in that scenario, I wish that the article talked about it, because they talked to different developers. I'm like, I want to know, did they ever get paid?
True, yeah.
Or not, because you can't just hold on to the money forever. Like, I understand that Itch does not want to get in trouble for handing over money for banned content, banned per these payment processors. But, like, that's the money that the company, or the company, these developers earned. There's no real, I feel like it shouldn't be retroactively applied. All the payments that were going to go through beforehand, before payment processors stepped in, should have been allowed to go through. And then it's just like, okay, afterwards, okay, no more. Like, something, it just doesn't make any sense to me that I hope that payments have gone through and just they never updated about it on Itch. Because I feel like then wouldn't everyone be still, like,
really mad?
Mad?
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, like, at least the developers? I don't know. It just seems very strange, and I hope they were paid, because I don't know. I don't have insight into it.
Well, from the payment processors that are putting up a stink about this, they're saying, you know, funding illegal material, so technically they wouldn't want them to be paid. Whether it's retroactive, like, you know, whether they earned it or not, like, to them they're saying it's illegally earned, right? Isn't that the argument from Visa and MasterCard, not from me? So if it was illegally earned money, like in any other means, you wouldn't be able to keep that money because they say that's illegal funds.
I mean, it's not illegal, though. It's just stuff that they don't want. Right.
I know. So they should have their money.
Yes, they should have their money. And obviously, payment processors shouldn't have this kind of power. Although I understand what it's for or what it's meant to be about.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not being applied in a way that's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
It's being applied in a way to try to silence creativity, artistry, you know, freedom of speech here in America, things like that. It's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the solution is. I don't have a solution to say.
Well, you mentioned, and the article mentioned as well, that this happened with the Allside a couple years ago, right?
It's happened with everyone. It's happened with Patreon. It's happened with Etsy.
Yeah.
It happened with Pixiv.
Is that what happened with eBay too? Is it the same? Probably
similar.
Yeah. Tumblr, like anyone that had adult content that no longer has it is probably related to payment processes, right? Yes.
It almost happened to OnlyFans.
Yep.
OnlyFans literally, like, put out press and they were like, you know, we're about all the creators now and we're gonna be, like, this place for, you know, basically all ages creators.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone threw a fit because obviously the vast majority of people who are creators on OnlyFans, as well as those people who are paying for those content creators, it's primarily adult content. So in the end, they were able to survive with their current business model. Although I think they changed, like, I think one problem with, you know, there are payment processors that will handle adult content. It's just a lot more expensive.
Hmm.
So that's not desirable. But obviously there's some, right? Like, porn sites exist. You know, mm-hmm. It's just a lot more expensive, I think. And people don't like that.
Yeah. So there's no solution right now, but I know a lot of people are saying, like, call Visa and MasterCard and tell them that you're unhappy, and one could do that.
Yeah.
People are sharing numbers widely, and I saw that, you know, people were clogging up the customer service lines, and anything that, you know, gets in their way a little bit will maybe get heard more than, you know, just shouting on Blue Sky or something. So mm-hmm. That's the one way to get their attention. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we don't fully know. Like, there is a lot of coverage that is attributing this current wave to a specific organization that happened to be based in Australia called Collective Shout. And they did make a stink about one game in particular on Steam, I believe. But I don't know that we can attribute everything that's happening right now to them specifically and whatever they were doing. But obviously,
I don't think so. Again, this has been happening for years.
Yeah.
It's not.
So more than, like, probably they didn't even really do anything at the end of the day. They might have made a bit of a stink that made someone go, you know, it's time to crack down again. But I don't know that this one organization made MasterCard and Visa go, hey, yeah, we better get a move on cracking down on adult content.
No, I think maybe just made them, possibly, it might not even been related, but maybe someone realized, oh my God, there's adult content on, there's adult video games.
Yeah.
I really don't think it's them, at least in total, because this is
it's very widespread.
That has been going on for so long. To so many websites, this organization didn't care about all those other things per se. This is just how the payment processors like to be. They like to be, you know, safe.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks.
Yeah. But what doesn't suck is the cool thing you saw online the other day. You want to share that with everyone?
Okay. Yeah. This is a huge jump to something else, but I recently became aware of this new monitor called the Checkmate IPS Retro Monitor. and it is a, you know, basically just a PC monitor, but it's styled after, you know, retro PC monitors. So it's not super, it's not like as big as a CRT, but it's kind of got that boxy CRT back a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's got built-in speakers, it's got a nice screen, and it's meant to be used for retro gaming. And I like it because it looks cool, and because it has a lot of ports on the back. You know, you've got your HDMI, but you've also got, you know, S-Video, and you've got, like, I don't know if it's called D-Sub, I don't know, the PC old one, you know, all these various different types of video connectors, and also has like HDMI input and output, so you could like use it as a display monitor while also feeding it into like a streaming device, like a Elgato or whatever. So I think it's cool, and I want it, but I don't really know why I want it, because I don't know what I would use it for, especially, you know, I have PC monitors, new ones, nice ones. I also have a CRT. I guess we've got multiple CRTs in this house. I just like it. With that said, it doesn't matter if I like it because I won't be able to get it. I'm pretty sure it's based, the company's based in Europe, and nothing on their site says they will even ship to the U.S., even in the best of times, maybe they never would have. There was a crowdfunding campaign for it originally, so maybe in that crowdfunding campaign they did have global shipping, I don't know, but that's over, so I'm not gonna be able to get my hands on it anyway. But I wish I could, because it looks cool. It is expensive though, it's like somewhere between $600 and $800 or something. Mm-hmm. So it's not cheap, very much a specialty thing. But I like it, and I wish I could have it.
All those ports. Yeah, too bad it's in Europe. I bet even if it would ship here, it would be so very expensive. It's probably heavy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy, boxy, and also tariffs.
Yeah. Well, don't get us started about tariffs. We haven't talked about that yet. In the interest of time, we shall move along to what we've been playing, watching, etc. I guess playing and watching is all we're going to talk about today, actually. First off, I'll share a demo I played. So I actually downloaded the Digimon Story Time Stranger demo for PS5. I've always been interested in these Digimon games. There have been quite a few of them. The one that comes to mind first is Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth, which I guess is pretty old now, like nearly 10 years old, but there have been some other more recent ones. And I don't know. Well, I guess I do know. So I was at Anime Expo and I got to try the demo there, Bandai Namco's booth, and I had some fun with it. I didn't get to play a ton, but I was like, oh, this looks pretty fun, and I love Digimon, so when I heard that they were releasing a demo for home consoles, I figured I'd try it out. It's probably about an hour and 15 minutes, I mean, give or take, depending on how quickly you go through things. I didn't really, like, grind. I guess you can grind a bit if you want to. I don't know what, though. It's not catching Digimon, it's not cloning Digimon, but whatever you use to make the Digimon, you, like, gather data on them, and then when you have enough data, you can produce them. So I guess some people, I was reading on forums that people wanted to make certain Digimon, so they spent more time grinding for those ones. Well, I didn't do any of that, so I kind of just went through it at my own pace. I like that you can pick Japanese or English voices, and you can choose a feminine or masculine male main character to play as, and it's... You really just kind of throw you into some story where I have no idea what's going on. I don't know if it's related to any of the past games or if you're just meant to not know what's happening. But you get to pick one out of three, like, starter Digimon, very much like with Pokemon. I picked, was it Devimon? Yeah. I think was his name, or Devilmon. Anyway, a cute little demon guy. And got to fight a whole bunch of different Digimon and wander around, and it was quite fun. I would be interested in picking it up, but I just got So much to play. Who knows, you know? To be honest, I bought this is embarrassing. So I bought Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth in Japanese for the PS Vita. I assume I did that because it wasn't out in English yet. Honestly, I don't remember, but that's how long ago I bought it. So and I still haven't played it. So that's my shame. But yeah, that was cute. As for games, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still playing Yakuza. I finally got to see Majima, which is what I've been waiting for. So thank you for picking up the pace a little. And we've been working our way through the Vinegar Syndrome backlog. So we had some hits and some misses.
Okay. So we watched Stanley, which I would say is more of a hit than a miss.
Oh, yeah, I like that
About
one.
this guy who loves snakes and has a bunch of snakes in his house,
Yep.
and he kind of just lives out there in the Florida,
What do they call it?
I don't
Not
know,
wetland.
wetlands, I don't know,
Yeah.
with his snakes,
The marsh. I don't know
yeah,
what it
whatever
is.
it is.
Yeah.
And he would be just happy living his whole life like that, but then people come and interfere with his happiness, kill his snakes.
Yeah.
It's very sad,
Yeah.
but it's nice when he's cute with his snakes, when he takes a snake and the on a ride with him, or makes them clothes or a bed. That's all
Yeah,
cute.
he did that. Yeah. I like when he puts it in the car and says, "Don't you go anywhere." And it's like, dude, it's a snake. You could put a dog in a car and tell it not to go anywhere, and it still would if you left the window open. The snake, especially. I don't.
Yeah, so that's like a grindhouse film, some made for, drive-in. But I thought it was more competent than certainly some films of that style that I've seen, so that was good.
I liked it. I don't think I've seen that many films of that style, but it felt like a coherent and relatively well done film. I mean, not top of the line or anything, but the acting wasn't like horrible. There was a story, there were some fun moments. I liked all the snake stuff. Like, there was quite a lot of snakes. So we did see some things that probably of the era where the snakes maybe weren't treated well, so if you are sensitive to that, I don't know that it's not like necessarily props in it, is what I'll say. It's not necessarily special effects of the bad things happening, which was sad. But I guess that's all the time.
Yeah. Let's see. We also watched two movies with very similar names. We watched Psycho Girls and also Psycho Sisters. Thinking, I have to think because I'm like, which one is which?
I
Psycho
remember.
Girls is the one we watched first.
Yes.
And it's co more confusing because the girls
Our
are
sisters.
sisters.
Yeah. There's girls and psycho girls are sisters. And that's the one where a girl, and you see the opening of the film, the girl kills her parents on, is it one of their birthdays or
Something
something
or
like that? Or, yeah,
anniversary.
no, it's their anniversary, yeah. So it's like they're in bed, they wake up in the morning, and she's made them breakfast, but she poisons them with rat poison. And then it jumps to the future, and I guess somehow that sister framed the other sister for it. We never see that, but it the story reveals that one of the sisters, the one that didn't actually do the killing, has been in an insane asylum, and she's finally going to get out. And the other sister who's been out, who was the one that actually did the killing, but has pretended, to go about her life as if she didn't do it, she doesn't want the other sister to get out because she hates her, and also,
Well,
I
she
guess
doesn't want the
it doesn't,
secret to be
yeah,
revealed.
that too. But the other sister gets out anyway. But the other sister has been driven mad by being in the insane asylum, and so she goes on a rampage. And I just thought it was funny because I didn't look anyway at the description on the cover of the movie, but we, as you've mentioned in the previous episode, we often find them on streaming to watch, and the one sentence like summary of the movie was really not what it's about because, I mean, spoilers for Psycho Girls, I guess, but it's like the description is that the one of the girls gets out, or no, the sister gets out of the insane asylum, and then she's seeking revenge on her sister and is gonna kill her. Well, she kills her very quickly, and then it turns into this horrible torture thing with all these people that were at, like, a dinner party?
Yes, just because the sister worked as, like, a cook for them.
Yeah. So the sister that was not in the insane asylum worked as a chef, in-house chef / cook for this rich couple. That rich couple is having a dinner party, and so the evil sister, insane asylum sister, crashes the party with her two insane asylum buddies, and then they drug everyone and take them back to the insane asylum and then torture them. And that's really the main part of the movie. It was wild. It was very wild. Mm-hmm. But not in a completely awful way.
No, I think...
It was very interesting.
Yes. I think the part where everyone's taken away and tortured, but it's like a show, is very funny.
Yes.
Especially because the trio of murderers are like doing this for Sigmund Freud.
Yeah, they have a portrait of Sigmund Freud and like an altar. And don't they say, say Hail Freud?
Yes.
Yeah, which is...
It's weird and it's very funny.
It's very silly.
And didn't we find out that the director of Psycho Girls, that was his first directorial debut.
Mm-hmm.
And his most recent is Hot Frosty.
Yes, the Hallmark classic. Actually, I'm not sure if it's Hallmark. It might be like a Netflix. But anyway, Christmas, cheesy Christmas classic of our modern age, Hot Frosty, which I have seen. I watched it a few years ago and it's quite amusing. So I feel like this holiday season, we're going to have to rewatch Hot Frosty in honor of Psycho Girls director, whose name I don't even remember. But good job. That's quite the history. You know, start from Psycho Girls and make it all the way to Hot Frosty. So that's a Christmas romantic comedy movie where a woman wants a perfect man and she makes a snowman and she's like, I wish you were the perfect man. And then that snowman becomes a real man.
Yep.
Anyway, but Psycho Sisters, which is also about sisters. I mean, it's in the title. Psycho Girls was about sisters too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Psycho Sisters, to me, not as fun as Psycho Girls. That was kind of a downer, but weird.
Yeah.
So that was three sisters living together. One of the sisters, so some frat boys break into the house and rape and kill one of the sisters, causing the other two sisters to also go insane. So just like the first movie, they're sent to an insane asylum. They get out on good behavior. Like, so they don't escape like in the other movie. They're let go, but then their trauma remains, and so they just go on a killing spree and kill all men. The best part being that they chop off all their dicks and put them in jars and have a collection in their cabinet labeled with all the dicks.
Yep.
Like Jock or Rapist Number One.
Yep.
You know, anyone listening to this is probably like, they're into some weird stuff, huh? I'll say we're not keeping that one, right? That was not a keeper, Psycho Sisters. It was comparatively really poorly done. That was a straight-to-VHS release, wasn't it? Interestingly, they did later remake it, right? It was so well-regarded. But the acting wasn't very good. Writing wasn't very good. There were some fun moments, but overall, it really felt like, I don't know, is this rude to say, like, someone's college project or something? Like, a little above that. It wasn't, like, really, it didn't feel like a proper movie to me. I don't know. Did you have any thoughts about Psycho Sisters you would like to share?
No.
Okay.
It's fine. I don't know. It's, yeah, it could be better. It's not.
Okay, thank you. Finally, we did watch some television, and we have been watching this over the past couple of weeks. All because of a YouTube video, actually. So I will credit this YouTube video by someone named Alien Bob, who does some fun YouTube videos about mostly obscure or not very well-regarded video games. And they did a pretty long-form video on a Desperate Housewives, I believe it was PS2 game?
No, it was a PC game.
PC game? Okay, PC game. That was very, like, Sims-like, right? But it followed the Desperate Housewives TV plot somewhat, at least, about your, like, creating your own housewife and then being put into that story of the world. So, kind of inspired by that, I was like, well, you know, I've never seen Desperate Housewives, and you hadn't either, so we decided to start watching it, and we just finished season one. So what did you think?
I think it's fun. I like it. As far as a soap opera, it's pretty good. At this point, it hasn't gotten to the point, which I assume will happen, where soap operas kind of repeat the same plot points again, because they're like, we don't know what to do. So far, it's good.
So would you say that, I mean, Desperate Housewives has all the trappings of a soap opera, but it's not like daily the way that Passions was. So is it like a soap opera inspired drama then?
Yeah, or? It's better than a soap opera in that regard, because soap opera is every day a true one. So it's very slow. Anything happening is super slow. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's like the best parts of a soap opera, you kind of get the drama quick, and then you get more drama, and you get some resolutions, and you get more drama, and you get some resolutions, but it's much faster, so I like that.
Yeah.
It's not highly repetitive at this point. It's a lot of humorous things, but also it's starting to get more dark.
Yeah, and there's some weirdly dark stuff that they almost kind of play off in a way that, well, it's the whole fact that one of the girls is, like, engaging relations with an underage guy who happens to be the star of Passions.
Yes.
The actor, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah. So they brush over that big time. I don't think that would fly in 2025 television, but there are other things, like Murdered Happens, obviously, but just other things like one of the things that I had a hard time with was, like, what seems to be the main antagonist or the person who's villainized is a child, and he has a lot of mental instability that's brought on by horrible things that has happened in his life, and I think, you know, this is old and it's not treated in the best way. And they are kind of going into it a bit and, like, showing how the father has done things. And, you know, it's really the father who's the real villain. But also they're so like, no, but the kid's bad too. And it's kind of like a little weird. Some weird things for sure. But overall fun and humorous. And I would like to see more. It does leave it on a pretty big cliffhanger, I feel, at the end of season one, which I'm not used to. I kind of feel like often shows will wrap up because they don't know whether they're going to continue, so they won't leave you with that big of a cliffhanger. But we still got, what, 6 more seasons of Desperate Housewives, I think. I don't know how it'll go for that many seasons, but it'll be fun to see some more. And didn't you mention they've recently started, like, a retrospective podcast about the show?
Yes, one of the actresses who was one of the main housewives started a podcast.
So we've got our finger on the pulse of the hot topics.
I guess so. Age.
We're ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I think the point was, like, because also that actress's daughter is in it, as well as the actress's fake daughter in the show is in it. And I think the point is the daughter, the real daughter, is there to kind of see the work because she's never seen it, and also say if it holds up to the youth of today's tastes and understanding of the world.
Well, we can't speak to that.
No. I'm going to say it's entertaining, but I'm going to say there's a lot of things that definitely don't hold up. Some of what you've mentioned, other things as well. There's a lot that's like, okay.
A lot of stereotyping. Different types of
characters. A lot of things.
All kinds of things. Oh, I didn't even mention. Oh, there's some. Oh, you made me remember it. Maybe the worst part. So I blocked it out of my memory. Is the whole storyline with this abusive husband, like physically abusive husband, who is then sent to jail because I don't know what he's doing, some illegal stuff in his job. And he wants a child and his wife doesn't want a child, and he, like, tampers with her contraceptive pills and to get her pregnant. That is definitely the worst thing, and that, yes, that, and she does get pregnant, and finds out, and yet they still continue their, you know, screwed up relationship, and she's obviously trying to manipulate him to get some good things for her, but they never even talk about the possibility of her, you know, not keeping the baby. It's like, she, this woman who has, like, been adamant, like, I'm never gonna have a child, all of a sudden she's pregnant, it's never even a question of any other option but just having this kid and raising it. And then she keeps trying to bargain with this man who we've seen has physically abused her, and, like, he's been violent to other people. Like, he even was thought to be doing hate crimes against gay men because he keep beating up men that he thought his wife was having extramarital affairs with, but it turned out that all of the men that he was beating up were gay, happened to be gay, and then he got in a whole thing because of that. But we know that he's a violent person, and yet she's still trying to manipulate him, and it's like, girl, he could murder you. He could murder you and your child that we don't even know why you're having, and it's just a mess. See, you got me started. Mm-hmm. I remembered it all. Yeah. Came flooding back to me. That's mm-hmm. pretty bad. Yes. So I'm not looking forward to seeing that storyline play out, honestly. Of her having a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she just won't have it. Maybe there's still time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, it would be interesting. But I don't think they would have a podcast where the daughter of the woman paying the one of the lead actresses would say, yeah, it doesn't hold up.
I think you're right, but I would hope that they would be honest.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll give it a listen and report back.
I don't know. It could be boring too.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Well, I think that's all that we want to talk about for this episode. I hope you are happy to hear that we're back after 2 weeks. So I think we will be trying to keep that bi-weekly schedule that we had before our bit of a hiatus. So you can look forward to new episodes every other Friday, and we shall see you again in 2 weeks.